Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Ox Talk for the week of Tuesday the 17th of September. My name is Ross and I am compiling this week's edition. This week's news items were collected from the local Oxford papers, some selected and read by Patricia Lee, with some news being selected by Margaret Simpson and read by Hazel Hobbs. Sunrise for the upcoming week will be around 7 a.m. with sunset being around 7 p.m. The copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawville. Here, there will be some instructions on how to listen to Ox Talk using your Alexa device. And at the end of this Ox Talk edition, you will hear how to access Ox Talk online. But before that, a quick message from Margaret Simpson.
Hello, listeners. 2 weeks ago, I invited you to Ox Talk's AGM. I'm still inviting you to the AGM, but I'm letting you know that the venue has had to be changed and Ox Talk's autumn meeting and AGM will now take place at My Vision, Oxfordshire, Bradbury Lodge, Abingdon Road. The meeting will still start at 2 p.m. and we can still offer you transport to and from the meeting. Has any listener thought about being the listener representative? And on another totally different topic, do you need help signing up for pension credit so that you will be receiving the winter fuel payment? Please get in touch using the telephone number, which is given out each week in the Ox Talk recording. And for any of those items that I've just mentioned, please leave your name and telephone number and we will get back in touch with you. Bye for now. Hope to see you on the 12th of October. Good wishes. Bye.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure.
Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
A former Thames Valley Police TVP call handler has been jailed after admitting to sharing police information with organisation crime groups. Following an independent Office for Police Conduct directed investigation, Catherine Arrell, 29, pleaded guilty in May to three offences relating to participating in the criminal activities of an organised crime group and four charges of misconduct in public office. She was sentenced to 34 months imprisonment at Reading Crown Court on Monday, September the 9th. A court heard that Arrell was working from home, where she lived with her parents and her brother, during the coronavirus pandemic when the incidents happened. Arrell of Silverclose Maidenhead had input non-emergency queries into the police system and managed the queries while her brother John Arrell, 38, of Manor Lane, Sunbury, accessed the police system to look up information that was then shared with organised criminal groups. The court heard there was also an alleged Encro chat found on a phone in Arrell's room, which shows information being shared across the criminal network. Officers from TVP's counter-corruption unit carried out the investigation after an internal audit raised concerns of potential unauthorised access to police systems. On conclusion of the investigation in July 2022, it was decided a file of evidence should be sent to the Crown Prosecution Service, which authorised charges. As a result of the investigation, Arrell's brother, who does not work for TVP, was also charged with 3 counts of participating in the criminal activities of an organised crime group. He admitted the charges and was sentenced to 24 months imprisonment. During the investigation, drugs were found in Arrell's bedroom and, as a result, a TVP misconduct hearing took place where it was determined she would have been dismissed with immediate effect had she not already resigned in October 2020 prior to the hearing. IOPC Director Steve Noonan said, "All police officers and staff are in a position of trust where they have access to confidential and sensitive information on police systems. They know that any searches of police records must be for legitimate purposes and the information should never be passed on to a third party." Catherine Arrell's behaviour fell well below what is expected of any member of a police force and was a serious breach of trust placed in the police by the public. This investigation ensured that Ms. Arrell and her brother were held accountable for their actions.
Hundreds of people lined the streets as a historic funfair returned to Oxford for its 400th year. The annual St. Giles Funfair, which attracts thousands to the city, returned to Oxford on the 9th of September for 2 days. Due to the fair, St. Giles Road, which is next to several of the University of Oxford's college buildings, is closed for a 2-day period until 8 a.m. on the 11th. Renowned as one of the greatest and most prestigious fairs in the country, it traditionally takes place on the Monday and Tuesday after the first Sunday post St. Giles Day. Operating from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m, people of all ages enjoyed the wide range of stalls and rides. The fair began as a parish festival to celebrate the feast of the patron saint, St. Giles. In the 18th century, St. Giles Fair was a toy fair, which then developed into a general children's fair in the early 19th century.
A suspended sentence has been handed to a man who threatened to kill himself and his children after his partner tried to break up with him, a court has heard. Nathan Grant was sentenced at Oxford Crown Court on Tuesday, September the 10th, for 1 count each of possession of a knife-bladed article in a public place, criminal damage, and engaging in controlling coercive behaviour in an intimate family relationship. The 35-year-old, who was in a relationship with Kezia Wilkins, pleaded guilty at Oxford's Magistrates Court on July the 29th to all counts after stabbing his girlfriend's car tyre when she tried to drive away from the home following an attempted breakup. She wanted to split with Grant of the Elms Wantage after he displayed controlling behaviour between July the 1st and July the 28th this year, such as constantly checking her phone and asking where she was. Grant threatened to take his life, hers and their children's lives, when she expressed wanting to split, sentencing him to 12 months imprisonment, suspended for 2 years, recorder Joseph Hart said, "Your conduct was calculated to maximise fear. You threatened to harm yourself, you threatened to harm your family, you threatened to harm her. You were consumed by jealous rage. You lost control of yourself. You must have terrified your children. You broke your home and made your relationship with your partner even more unrecoverable. This was a serious offence." During the sentencing, it was heard that on July the 27th, Miss Wilkins, a care assistant, had asked Grant to break up after he had displayed controlling behaviour. This started an argument in which Grant threatened his life whilst holding a hammer, also threatening to smash her car windows. Miss Wilkins said she didn't believe he would kill anyone. When she tried to leave in her car, Grant then stabbed her passenger front tyre, but didn't succeed in deflating it. Grant was unrepresented in court, but recorder Hart took into account the pre-sentence report written by probation about the defendant. In the report, Grant states he is ashamed and sorry about what happened and wants to work on being a better father for his children. The defendant also had a number of family members in court supporting him during the sentencing, including the victim, who did not provide an impact statement. A cheer sounded when Grant, who has no relevant previous convictions, was handed a suspended sentence. He was also ordered to complete 30 sessions of an accredited program, 6 months of mental health treatment, and 5 rehabilitation activity days.
Police have said old school advice on how to keep your car from being stolen still applies, despite many thefts involving keyless vehicles. A Thames Valley police alert said a number of cars were stolen from driveways, roadsides and private property in general last year. Officers from the TVP, West Oxfordshire and Charwell areas issued the alert, which gave advice such as hiding valuables, moving keys from the front of the house, and parking under street lighting. But, it said, the issue is that a modern car can be started from over the road via a laptop and taken, quite often without the owner's knowledge. However, a steering wheel lock, foot pedal locks and handbrake and wheel locks were still useful in preventing theft. PCSO Moulding said, once your car is unlocked digitally and started, the last thing any thief wants to do is dismantle a lock placed on or in the car. This is time-wasting and likely unexpected from the technical thief. In one such case, the owner found their car running on the driveway, never to be taken, due to the internal locks placed on the steering wheel and the pedals. So, for an extra layer of security and, at a good budget, time to think old school.
The rerouting of an Oxford Rail Station walkway is killing footfall in Frideswyde Square, traders have complained. Rainbow and Spoon fashion boutique selling women's clothing, jewellery and accessories has been trading in the city for more than 35 years. It managed to survive building work needed for a multi-million pound scheme to revamp the square in 2015 and then the COVID lockdown. Now it is facing further difficulties after Network Rail contractors Kia rerouted a walkway for pedestrians which means very few people now walk past the shop or nearby restaurants. Instead, as a result of the rerouting of the walkway, shoppers pass in front of the Syed Business School on the other side of the square. The walkway was diverted as work continues on the station scheme. Botley Road has been closed at the rail bridge since April last year and was due to open in October, but work has overrun, with a review due to be completed this month. Miss Suleiman Bell said, "My footfall has been halved and I believe all the businesses on this side of the square are suffering." The walkway was rerouted about 6 to 8 weeks ago and it's been a complete disaster for us. I've put new signs up in the square directing customers and I hope that helps. Miss Suleiman Bell urged contractors to restore the original walkway as soon as possible, or at least give pedestrians the option of walking on the side of the square featuring the shops and the restaurants. She added, "The contractors could create a separate walkway through the Beckett Street car park. If nothing is done, we are facing the prospect of a dead Christmas." Rainbow and Spoon is now updating its website so it can sell more clothes online while footfall is reduced. Avtar Singh Lalpurwal, who has run Uni Food and Wine grocery store for the past 14 years, said footfall at his store was 90% down since the walkway was diverted. The shop sells wine, beer, sweets, vapes and groceries. He added, "We don't deliver, we rely on passing trade and now we are not getting it. They should restore the original walkway so that people walk past our shop. If this carries on, it could finish us as a business. The contractors should be working round the clock to get the work finished, but they are not, and they are not even telling us when it is going to finish." In July, Network Rail announced the road will not open as planned at the end of October, and a series of options for the scheme are now being investigated. The Department for Transport, Network Rail, Contractors Kier, and the County Council are expected to make an announcement later this month on how the scheme will move forward. Network Rail and Contractors Kier have been asked for comment.
Nature and carbon reduction projects in West Oxfordshire have been given a boost through a new partnership. West Oxfordshire District Council has joined forces with Wild Oxfordshire, Wychwood Forests Trust and the Low Carbon Trust to tackle issues related to habitat loss, climate change and pollution. Councillor Andrew Prosser, Executive Member for Climate Action and Nature Recovery at West Oxfordshire District Council, said, "We're fortunate to live in an area that is rich with diverse habitat. However, like most of the county, the district's biodiversity has suffered overall declines during the last few decades. The landscape continues to be fragmented through accelerated housing growth and increased infrastructure and traffic, as well as the removal of hedgerows and other development. Water quality and river habitats have been severely impacted by pressures from human activity and sewage pollution. Tackling the climate crisis remains an urgent challenge." The partnership will see Wychwood Forest Trust progress the Windrush in Whitney project, aiming to protect and enhance the landscape of the Windrush Valley. Meanwhile, Wild Oxfordshire plans to lend ecology support to communities, concentrating on improving the public's knowledge and skills, with the aim of increasing the number of green spaces being managed for nature in the district. Households, businesses, schools and other organisations in the area will be supported in improving the energy efficiency of their buildings and switching to renewable electricity. The project also covers transport, planning for new homes, and habitat restoration. Councillor Lydia Akazewski, Executive Member for Environment at the District Council, said, "We are extremely lucky to have so much nature recovery expertise in West Oxfordshire. Working in partnership with specialist organisations will enable the best and most innovative work to be carried out in the most cost-efficient way. The projects include supporting Wild Oxfordshire's management of the Evenload Catchment Partnership, which is working to improve natural flood management, water quality and river restoration and wetland creation of the River Evenload and its wider catchment."
A single map that gives live raw sewerage spill alerts and information on the quality of water in all the rivers and streams in Oxfordshire has been launched. The Oxford Rivers Portal, a website and map that helps people understand the health of the Thames and its tributaries in the county, has been launched by environmental charities the River Trust and Thames 21 and Research Institute, the UK Centre for Ecology and Hydrology, UKCEH. Users can zoom in and click on any of more of the 2,000 locations to find out real-time information or data from the past 3 years. Claire Robertson, Oxford Rivers Project Officer at Thames 21, said, "Water quality and the health of the rivers must improve. The main sources of pollution are agriculture and the water industry, plus a growing threat from plastics and forever chemicals. As more people look to England's rivers for recreation, we all need to up our game. We hope this portal makes it easier for people to decide whether they want to swim or take out their canoe or paddleboard on a certain day or not. River swimming is so good for you if you do it safely. Don't go into water if you can't swim against. Don't jump into water where you don't know what's underneath, and wash your hands after swimming." Dr. Virginie Keller, an environmental modeller at UKCEH, added, "River pollution is now a major issue of concern for many people, but it's difficult to get clear, up-to-date information about water quality and conditions locally. Our portal is a one-stop shop, bringing together a variety of data in an accessible way. The development of the Oxford Rivers Portal is part of the European GovAqua project, which aims to accelerate a transition towards sustainable and fair water use by better water governance. It's funded by the European Union and UK Research and Innovation." The team behind the portal says the data and information will enable users to gather evidence to understand the state of their local watercourses and thus stimulate discussions between the public, regulators and water companies about policies and management relating to rivers and streams. As designated bathing sites, Port Meadow in Oxford and Wallingford Beach are tested weekly for potentially harmful bacteria by the Environment Agency between mid-May and the end of September. Apart from one day in Wallingford, all the bacteria readings at these two sites have been below the level of concern this season. Analysis of data from 2023 has found that 5 out of 7 local sewage treatment works for which data has been provided show indications of illegal early spills of raw sewage.
The Ashmolean Museum has launched a fundraising drive to save an historic painting for the nation. Museum staff are raising money to buy a painting of the Crucifixion by the Renaissance master Fra Angelico, dating to the 1420s. Due to its cultural and art historical importance, the painting has been barred from immediate export, but is at risk of leaving the UK unless a domestic buyer is found. The Crucifixion has been in a private British collection for more than 200 years and is valued at more than £5 million on the open market. The museum has until October the 29th to raise £4,481,000 to buy the painting in a private sale. So far, more than £3.1 million has been secured, including funding from major donors, a circle of more than 25 supporters, and a significant grant from the Art Fund, with several grant applications pending. Ashmolean director Dr. Zar Sturges said, "This is an unrepeatable chance to save a powerfully engaging painting by one of the great painters of the Florentine Renaissance for the public. We are immensely grateful to all of those who have helped us make such a positive start to our campaign and sincerely hope that others will join us to secure this beautiful and moving work." The Crucifixion is one of the earliest surviving panel paintings by Fra Angelico and the earliest version of the subject he was to return to repeatedly throughout his career. Fra Angelico was one of the key artists of the Italian Renaissance, but there are no complete works by the artist in the UK. The National Gallery and the Courtauld Gallery only holding fragments of larger altarpieces in their collections. If the Ashmolean is successful in raising the funds, this early Crucifixion would join a later work by the artist and assistants in the Ashmolean, a triptych of the Virgin and Child, making the Ashmolean the only museum in the country where visitors could witness Fra Angelico's development over the course of his career. The Crucifixion was discovered in a private UK collection and attributed to the master in the 1990s. Fra Angelico was active from 1417 and died in 1455. Following the announcement of the temporary export bar, Christopher Baker, member of the Reviewing Committee on the Export Works of Art and Objects of Cultural Interest, said, "Fra Angelico was one of the great innovators in the evolution of early 15th century Florentine art. This profoundly moving devotional work, with its delicate colour harmonies and deeply considered expressive figures, demonstrates the enduring power of his achievement."
A head teacher says mobile phones are important to pupils as research shines a light on the youngsters being hit or narrowly missed by vehicles while on devices. Poll for Churchill Motor Insurance found that 84% of secondary pupils admitted using their phone while walking near roads, and 18% had been hit by a vehicle or involved in a near miss. Some 54% of children received their first phone during the summer holiday before secondary school, with more than half also walking at least some of the way to school alone for the first time, according to the research. But Carla Berry, principal of Wickham Park Academy in Banbury, has said there are pros and cons for using phones in schools. Miss Berry said, "We know how important mobile phones are for our pupils. Out of school, they are key to their social and recreational activity. We also know just how distracting they can be, and we support initiatives aimed at educating young people around the safer use of mobile phones near roads. As a school in the heart of a busy town, We understand the hazard local traffic presents and are keen to mitigate the risks. Churchill has launched a Screen Down Eyes Up campaign, which aims to raise awareness of the risks of using mobile phones when crossing roads. The insurance company has shared its latest research with schools across the UK to raise awareness of the potential dangers of children's phone use near roads. It found 10% of secondary school pupils admit they are not aware of the dangers of using a phone while walking near a road. The research also found 45% of students use their phones to scroll social media whilst walking, including to school, and 69% admitted they often feel so distracted by their phones that they are unaware of their surroundings. Clinical psychologist Dr. Jessamy Hibbert said, "Children's experience of the visual world is very different from adults. Younger secondary school children do not combine different sensory information, such as vision and sound, to make sense of the world as adults do. Secondary school children are also more impulsive and do not process risk in the same way as adults, which means that signage directed at them around schools needs to be more noticeable and direct to grab attention away from their phones. Bright, contrasting colours, simple messages, multiple attention alerts incorporating sound and texture on the ground are all essential factors to encourage greater attention of the risks when crossing the road."
Oxford University has narrowly missed out on the top spot in the Daily Mail's National University Rankings. The historic institution came in at second place for a second year in a row in the list which rated the universities across the country. Imperial College London topped the rankings once again, due to its graduates being in demand, with more going into highly skilled jobs than those from any other university. Oxford did manage to pip Cambridge University, though, which came in at third, ahead of London School of Economics and Political Science and University College London. The social demographic of Oxford is changing after a concerted effort to open up the university to a wider range of students, reads the list. Oxford's determination to diversify its intake has not led to any compromises in its desire to recruit only the brightest, however. Most of the 23,000 or so who apply each year will go on to achieve at least AAA at A level, but the university prides itself on the fitness of its admissions process, featuring examinations and interviews to identify the student that will truly fly here. Academic life revolves around weekly tutorials, which take place individually or in small groups in college. There are 32 undergraduate colleges, spanning the ancient and modern, big and small, traditional and relaxed.
Oxford United women were denied a stoppage time penalty as they were held to a goalless draw at AFC Wimbledon. Chances were at a premium, but midway through the first half, the U's counter-attack from a Don's corner saw Zoe Barrett thwarted from a one-on-one situation. Just before half-time, a long-range effort from Ashley Hinks was tipped over the crossbar by United goalkeeper Beth Howard. Early in the second period, Lucy Trinder threaded a ball through for Barrett, who almost got the bottom of a Don's keeper, Rose Kite, who was out quickly. The officials took centre stage deep in stoppage time after Barrett was wiped out by former U's keeper Kite, who was booked with a free kick awarded just outside the penalty box. Phoebe Poole took the set piece but sent it over. United manager Sam Rose said after the game, "We want to win every week, so dropping points is never a good thing. Ultimately, we want to be top of the division and in the short, medium or long term, try and get this club into the second tier. Every game counts and dropping points is never really okay. I think putting it into perspective, they've made it really difficult for us. They've shut us out and we've not created anywhere near enough other than a one-on-one and maybe a half chance for a shout for a penalty at the end that might have meant it was a bit of a smash and grab for us. It was a scrappy game. We didn't necessarily get into our flow and that was the opposition's work, really. I think they pressed us and made it difficult for us to settle down. You've got to give them credit for that, really, but we're disappointed." The Ewes, fifth in the Southern Premier Division, travel to Leavers, Exeter City this weekend. Rose said, "We're expecting more of the same. They'll be front-footed, organised, aggressive, and they'll make it difficult for us. So it's important we dust ourselves down and try and find a way to dominate in those moments with the ball and play the way we want to play. We've kept a clean sheet and there were some really good moments of individual work to keep the ball out of the back of the net and stop the ball getting into the box. I suppose if you can't win it, then don't lose it. So we've got a point and we'll keep going. I don't think there'll be too many easy games as we approach Christmas, and then we'll see where we're at."
New measures to slow traffic will come to a dangerous Oxford suburb road which many children use to get to and from school. Cabinet Member for Transport Management, Andrew Gant, approved the traffic calming policies for Sandy Lane West and Blackbird Lees at a county council meeting on Thursday last week. This comes after an online survey suggested a lot more people supported rather than objected to the proposals for a humped zebra crossing, raised side road entry treatments known as struts, and round-top road humps at Sandy Lane West. Speaking out at the meeting, Mr. Gant said, "Many children use Sandy Lane West to get to and from school. There is a lot of support here and a lot of recognition that this is about safety and children." One unnamed Herschel Crescent householder said, "My daughter goes to school at St. John Fisher, and this road is very dangerous." Another anonymous householder added, "I drive down there for work frequently, and it's a really dangerous crossing for pedestrians. There are so many children walking down Sandy Lane for school. It's really important to prioritise their safety, and clear road markings will make it easier for drivers to do that." A couple of respondents blamed LTNs, low traffic neighbourhoods, as a reason why Sandy Lane West had become dangerous. One Sandy Lane West householder said, "Sandy Lane West has become exceptionally busy and more dangerous since the introduction of the nearby LTNs. A Spring Lane householder added, "At last, totally agree with all parts of the proposal. However, as the amount of traffic in Sandy Lane West has increased since the introduction of the Kylie LTN, and the fact that it is a feeder on and off the Eastern Bypass, no parking should be allowed along its length at any time, with the exception of a small window for school pickup. The measures approved are a humped zebra crossing west of the road's junction with Broadfields, and struts across its junctions with Broadfields, Coster Close and Spring Lane."
Passengers have joined forces to petition against a temporary weight restriction on a bridge across the Thames, which has meant it can't be used by buses. Donington Bridge, which carries Donington Bridge Road from Abingdon Road to Iffley Road, has had a temporary 7.5-ton weight restriction on it since August. Oxfordshire County Council imposed it with just a couple of days' notice as a precautionary measure due to a significant risk of corroding cables. But 375 locals have signed a petition saying alternative arrangements need to be put in place immediately. Oxford Bus Company has said it could do this but is waiting for funding from the County Council. The petition states that the withdrawal of services along Donington Bridge and the diversion of the 46 route away from Abingdon Road means people living on Donington Bridge Road are completely stranded without any bus service. It also means that people may be cut off from work, leisure, health services for children and the elderly and affordable shopping if their requirements for these are in the Abingdon Road or Donington Bridge Road. It also impacts on those commuting on the ST1 route to Harwell from these areas, it says. To reach destinations that were served by Donington Bridge, they now have to pay twice for a long detour journey into the city centre and out again. For those unable to walk those distances, the alternative is being confined to home, the petition says, adding that with autumn and winter approaching, for many in the community struggling to heat homes, the bus has provided a route to warm spaces such as libraries and community centres in Florence Park, Donington and South Oxford. The petition calls on Oxford Bus Company and the Oxfordshire County Council to immediately make arrangements to enable the public transport links to continue. It suggests a minibus serving the affected areas, which through ticketing and appropriate timetabling to link up with the usual routes, might be one solution. In addition, it wants Oxfordshire County Council to urgently prioritise repairs of the bridge in order not to prolong the difficulties being faced by our communities. Andrew Gant, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways, has said the authority was conscious of the disruption the move would cause. But the council said there was no timeline and the restriction will remain in place for many months.
Gary Richardson, 68, a daredevil broadcaster who formerly worked for BBC Radio Oxford and scaled a 600-foot chimney without a harness, has retired after half a century in the trade. He presented the Sports Bulletin on Radio 4's Today programme for the final time on the 9th of September. He joined the BBC in 1974 and got a job on BBC Local Radio in 1977, working at BBC Radio Solent, Radio Oxford, Radio Merseyside and Radio Nottingham. He finished on a high 50 years to the day since he began his BBC career, with interviews with former England manager Kevin Keegan and two-time Wimbledon champion Andy Murray. Mr. Richardson has interviewed some of the biggest names in the worlds of sport, showbiz and politics, from Bill Clinton and Muhammad Ali to Nelson Mandela and Pele. The BBC played a montage of his highlights, including the biggest moment of my career, interviewing former US President Clinton live on the centre court at Wimbledon during a rain break. The clips included coaxing horse racing tips from former Prime Minister David Cameron and introducing Serena and Venus Williams to singer Dionne Warwick. There was also audio of a young Mr. Richardson climbing a 600-foot chimney without a harness for BBC Radio Oxford, complete with an Alan Partridge-esque exclamation of, "I'm very frightened indeed at the moment."
Parents branded the last year a wasted one as they protested outside Oxfordshire County Council's offices 12 months on from a damning SEND special educational needs report. SEND parent action members gathered outside County Hall in Oxford ahead of a full County Council meeting. It came after an Ofsted report in September 2023 identified widespread and systemic failings with the Council's handling of SEND provision. Protesters displayed signs of phrases such as "no one listened" and "OCC stop wasting time," as the main message from speakers at the meeting was "you must do better." Peter Nellist, who is father of Katie Nellist, a regular teenage speaker at council meetings involved in the SEND system, said, "We've had a wasted year. What we need now is strong leadership from our elected representatives to overcome the heel dragging that we've seen over the past year. There is a lack of transparency." Claire, who did not disclose her surname, is mother of 9-year-old autistic son Zach, who also turned out to protest. Zach held a sign which said, "I cried for help. No one listened. Will you listen now?" His mother said, "I don't think anything has improved, and I think the culture has got to a point where they don't think about the impact on children." Qualified teacher Kathy Coles Clark Willett, who is Zach's tutor, said she had come out of mainstream education to become a private tutor as she thought it was not reaching the people who needed it. "There's too much seeing education as a one-size-fits-all," she said. "There is not enough support for children with additional needs and making education more accessible. They've kind of blanketed the problem." A few petitions were presented at the start of the meeting on the SEND subject, one of which has 669 signatures. An anonymous mother who spoke out with autistic 15-year-old son Felix suggested she was out of my comfort zone, but that this was a frequent occurrence for parents of SEND children. She added that communication is poor, but also pointed out the issue was not just with the current administration. Oxfordshire County Council says it is prioritising transforming the SEND system so that our children, young people and families are able to fulfil their potential. A spokesman added, "Since the Ofsted inspection in 2023, we have committed an additional £1 million to support SEND services. There will also be an additional 300 special places available by 2028 as new schools are completed. A significant amount of work has taken place to make necessary improvements across the local area partnership." The council says this includes the production of a priority action plan, which was approved in December 2023, as well as an enhanced pathways initiative.
Oxford United has appointed a company to create a matchday experience strategy for its proposed new stadium. The Ewes are looking to build a new home at the Triangle, south of Kidlington Roundabout, with the club's licence agreement at the Kassam Stadium running out in 2026. As well as the stadium, plans for the multi-purpose site include a 180-bed hotel, restaurant, conference centre, health and wellbeing space, gym and community plaza. A full planning application for a 16,000 capacity ground was submitted to Charwell District Council at the end of February, while in May, a legally binding lease option with Oxfordshire County Council was signed. In June, it was announced the application would not be considered until early next year, due to further information on matters such as transport and ecology being requested. The club has now enlisted the help of a creative agency called 2020, which has extensive experience in creating matchday experiences and has worked with some of the world's biggest football clubs, including Arsenal, Manchester City and Liverpool. Working closely with Oxford United, 2020 will develop an identity that reflects the club's modern and inclusive vision for the venue and incorporates its history and heritage, whilst also placing the guest experience at the very heart of the venue, the club said. Adam Benson, Chief Commercial and Marketing Officer at Oxford United, said, "Our ambition is to build an Oxfordshire landmark which instills community pride whilst being accessible and inviting for all who visit. We want fans and visitors to identify with the new stadium designs and are drawing upon real-life experiences to inform decisions. Moving from the Kasam to our new home in Kidlington will be a significant change. However, fans can rest assured that the new designs will respect our heritage and club culture. 2020 has an excellent track record of creating meaningful brand identities and destinations that resonate with people. They have worked on some of the most exciting projects in sport, so they are the perfect partner to support our ambition of creating an internationally recognised, award-winning new stadium."
Oxfordshire had one of the highest proportions of cyclists in the South East last year, a new figure shows. The charity Cycling UK said many councils have invested in improving infrastructure, despite cycling remaining below pre-pandemic levels nationally. Figures from the Active Lives survey from Sport England, compiled by the Department for Transport, show 18.1% of people in Oxfordshire were cycling at least once a week in the year to November 23, one of the highest levels across the South East. This was in line with the year before and a decrease from 21.4% in 2019, before the pandemic. Across the country, 10.1% of people reported cycling weekly, up from 9.3% the previous year, but still below pre-pandemic levels when 11.2% did so. Sarah McGonigal, Director of External Affairs at Cycling UK, said, "Although it's true that the percentage of people who cycle regularly in England has dropped slightly in recent years, there are fewer people regularly using all modes of transport, except for walking and the motorcycling, than in 2019. This is due to a myriad of factors, but the rise of remote working post-pandemic is likely a significant one. The truth is, most roads in England lack joined-up cycle lanes or bike parking, and where they do exist, they're often inconsistent and substandard, and this plays a big part in deterring people from cycling more." She added, "The good news is that this is starting to change. A number of local authorities, particularly since the pandemic, have built some fantastic infrastructure and have also invested in behaviour change projects. These projects work hand in hand with cycle infrastructure and encourage more communities to recycle for shorter journeys. They can also be tailored to support different communities, opening up cycling to a broader range of people." The survey also revealed a gap in cycling habits between the least and most deprived. While 11.1% of those better off cycled weekly, only 8.7% of those in the most deprived areas did. Fewer people cycled for leisure last year than they did before the pandemic, but more people walked regularly. Last year, 54.8% reported taking on a continuous 10-minute walk for leisure at least once a week, up from 50.9% in 2019. This figure stood at 58.8% in Oxfordshire. A Department for Transport spokesperson said, "We welcome the survey findings and we will consider all active travel data as we continue to shape our long-term vision for cycling and walking across the UK."
Sir Philip Pullman, the world-renowned author of His Dark Materials and Northern Lights, will be giving a talk in Kidlington this month. Sir Philip will be speaking about the inspiration behind the imagined worlds of his fantasy trilogy, which is based in Oxford, on Saturday, September the 21st, at 6 p.m. at St Mary's Church. He will also be in discussion with Jeremy Spafford from the Old Fire Station about their initiative assessing the role of storytelling within the community. The church will also welcome TV presenter and broadcaster Dame Prue Leith from the Great British Bake Off on October the 19th, then Oxford Playhouse director Debbie Dance on November the 16th. Dame Prue lives near Chipping Norton and has appeared at Chipping Norton Literary Festival. Both talks are at 6 p.m, with the latter based on Ms. Dance's passion for the conservation and developments of threatened church buildings. The Friends organisation will focus on raising funds for the historic building of St Mary's, where all the events will take place. The church has been described as Kidlington's greatest treasure by Best Churches author Simon Jenkins. Event details are on the Friends of St Mary's Facebook and website. An ancient tradition was given a unique twist at Westgate Shopping Centre over the weekend. Councillors, Oxford sheriffs and freemen swapped cattle for decorated oxen to conduct a one-off event that echoed the ancient Port Meadow cattle roundup. Westgate shoppers saw cattle swapped for 31 oxen sculptures, which have been on display across the country as part of the public art installation Oxtrail. Ahead of the Oxtrail auction taking place on Friday, all of the giant oxen were gathered at Westgate Shopping Centre by Sobel House Hospice staff, the organisers and beneficiaries of the event, for a farewell weekend. Combining this centuries-old practice with Oxtrail, representatives from the council in full ceremonial robe teamed up with the team at Sobel House Hospice to surprise shoppers with the special event. The Freeman are Oxford's most ancient body, predating the University of Oxford, and are recorded as holding Port Meadow in common in the Domesday Book. The Sheriff of Oxford is conservator of Port Meadow and the city fisheries and makes annual drives to the meadows. Traditionally, this was done to round up any cattle or horses that were being grazed illegally. These days, the roundup is purely ceremonial and coincides with the annual TB testing program. Sheriff James Fry said, "One of the main roles today of the sheriff is to be in charge of Port Meadow and the cattle and horses there. Oxtrail is an incredibly innovative idea, and Sobel House has done a great job. They are works of art, and I hope people come to bid on them in the auction on Friday. These are things that should be treasured for the future. They can now be part of our history, just like the roundup." The giant oxen will be paraded through the streets of Oxford today as more than 50 people lead them half a mile from Westgate to Said Business School in preparation for Friday's evening's auction. As well as buying tickets for the auction, people can also bid online ahead of the event
for any of the sculptures which formed the trail. A smaller postbox covered in unique doodles and signatures from some of Oxfordshire's famous residents and friends will be up for sale. It features notes from Dame Judy Dench, Heston Blumenthal, Men Greedyok, Peter Gabriel, Radiohead and Prue Leith.
Research led by Oxford University is calling for a change in narrative to acknowledge the factors such as poverty and debt which contribute to suicide. The experts have emphasised suicide should not just be presented as solely mental health, amid calls for a clear plan on action. The Samaritan said there remains a taboo when it comes to speaking about suicide and called on Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer to speak up and demonstrate his commitment to preventing more lives being lost in this way. Tuesday was World Suicide Prevention Day, and figures published last month by the Office for National Statistics showed suicide rates registered in England and Wales in 2023 were the highest in more than two decades. Research by global experts led by the University of Oxford has called for a change in the narrative to move from presenting suicide as a solely mental health issue to a wider acknowledgement of the impact of factors such as poverty, debt, addictions, homelessness, abuse, discrimination and social isolation. Professor Keith Horton from the University's Centre for Suicide Research said, "Suicide is a societal issue that requires a societal response. Many suicides are preventable, and public health strategies generally have the biggest impacts on reducing population suicide rates." Professor Jane Perkis, who was co-lead on the research published in The Lancet Public Health, argued that addressing these factors is likely to lead to sizable reductions in suicide rates, adding that researchers are calling on governments from around the world to take a suicide prevention in all policies approach that would see consideration given to how actions in a range of sectors might influence suicide and its prevention. Separately, the Royal College of Nursing called for employers to address the causes of workplace stress in light of its figures showing a 29% rise in staff seeking support for suicidal ideas from the college's advice line in the first 6 months of this year. The Department of Health and Social Care and NHS England have been contacted for comment. Samaritans can be contacted for free 24/7 on 116 123, email jo, at samaritans.org, or visit www.samaritans.org.
Dog's dinner plans to extend a church have been turned down by councillors. Proposals to build a large extension and relocate the entrance to the Welcome Evangelical Church in Witton Way in Witney were refused by West Oxford District Council's Lowlands Planning Committee. Planning officers recommended approval after they said amended plans showed that extensions to the building did not impact flats at next door Farriers Court and would not block direct sunlight. The Environment Agency withdrew its earlier objection on condition a drainage scheme was approved prior to commencement. 13 neighbours objected to the original plans over loss of light, overbearing impacts, overlooking and noise disturbance. 8 more objected to the amended plans over excessive scale, becoming too close to the historic boundary wall, a lack of parking and increased risk of flooding. Following a site visit, Councillor Nick Leverton asked the council planning officer whether he had actually been inside the house that they had not just been to, which he had not. Mr. Leverton quoted the council's planning policy, which says the development should be compatible with adjoining uses and not have a harmful impact on the amenity of existing occupants. He said, "I've never seen a worse case of that. I felt that that would destroy the lives of the people living in that property." He said the council prided itself on permitting high quality design, and this was not a high quality development. He described the design submitted as a mishmash and a dog's dinner. Councillor Andy Goodwin referred to the officer's report, stating that though the extension would undoubtedly result in some loss of light to the rear-facing windows and amenity spaces of numbers 9 to 11, the situation would be similar to that already existing at 8 Farriers Court. He said, "Just because it's close to one property, it doesn't mean it's right to create the same relationship, or worse, with others." Councillor Alastair Ray asked whether the very considerable increase in seat capacity at the church, which was almost double, meant the size of the proposed extension was justifiable. He asked if the applicant could apply for a single storey rather than a double storey extension at the back, which would be better for the neighbours. Planning Officer James Nelson said councillors had to make a decision on the application as it was in front of them. Referring to the site visit earlier in the day, Councillor Julian Cooper said, "I'm jolly glad we went there. The detrimental effect on the surrounding properties for me is too great. The proposals to build the large extension and relocate the entrance to the Welcome Evangelical Church in Witham Way in Witney were refused by West Oxfordshire District Council's Lowlands Planning Committee."
Parents of children with special educational needs protested outside County Hall in Oxford on the 10th of September as councillors and senior managers met for a full council meeting. Send Parents Action placed empty school bags displaying messages of the children's struggles to show elected representatives and council staff their continuing despair. Oxfordshire Send Parent Action is a community action group formed by Oxen Send families in 2022. The group claim that hundreds of Oxfordshire families are still struggling to get the education and health care their children are legally entitled to. They also claim that many young people have been waiting over 5 years for NHS diagnostic appointments, with parents and carers being forced to give up work to meet the shortfalls in education and care. "We're making every effort to help make things better, but we're seeing no improvement on any front," said spokesperson Dr. Claire Brenner. Ms. Brenner claims the council is continuing to fail families. In response to this, a spokesperson for Oxfordshire County Council said, "Since the Ofsted inspection in 2023, we have committed additional £1 million to support SEND services. There will also be an additional 300 special places available by 2028 as new schools are completed. A significant amount of work has taken place to make necessary improvements across the local area partnership. The council say this includes the production of a priority action plan, which was approved in December 2023, as well as an enhanced pathways initiative. This aims to support mainstream schools to be more inclusive and supporting their special schools to share best practice with mainstream schools through an in-reach outreach programme. The spokesperson added, "We are particularly pleased that the early years and key stage 2 performance indicators show that children with SEND are performing above the national average in some areas." Oxfordshire SEND Parent Action spokesperson Dr. Brenner said, "When we've seen OCC drop £51 million on a park and ride scheme in Ensham that cannot open, and pay our council taxes into the £161 million and counting Botley Road scheme, I struggle to accept that there isn't the money to support our most vulnerable children." However, Oxfordshire County Council says that in Oxfordshire they are prioritising transforming the SEND system so that our children, young people and families are able to fulfil their potential.
Almost 9 in 10 Thames Valley Health Research participants would take part in another study a new survey has revealed. The survey focused on experiences of volunteering for research studies in the NHS, public health and social care in Berkshire, Buckinghamshire, Milton Keynes and Oxfordshire. A total of 1,222 people completed the questionnaire in 12 months from April 1, 2023. The aim was to identify what is working well and where improvements can be made. The results found 88% of participants said research staff always treated them with courtesy and respect, and 87% said they would consider taking part in research again. Additionally, 86% of participants said researchers valued their contribution to the research, and 84% said the information they received prepared them before taking part. Almost 8 in 10 said they knew how to contact someone from the research team if they had any questions or concerns. 65% said they knew how they would receive the results of the research, and 64% said they had been kept updated about the research. The survey also found a third of comments about what was positive about their experience was about the staff. There was also praise for how organised and efficient trials were, including being flexible around appointments to fit around participants' other commitments. Many participants said they wanted to help others, with one respondent saying, "For me, it is about giving something back in a small way for all the care my family and I have received over the years." The responses were for people on studies supported by the National Institute for Health and Care Research Clinical Research Network, NIHRCRN, which funds and supports the delivery of health and care research trials. Dr. Nick Thomas, Clinical Director at the NIHRCRN Thames Valley and South Midlands, said, "The NIHR always welcomes this survey as it is a direct opinion from the most important member of the NHS clinical research community, the study participant. It is excellent to see that so many patients had good research experiences and that they would want to take part again. We are learning from all the feedback we received to ensure participants have the best possible research journey."
Oxford scientists are taking the first steps to develop a vaccine for people with a genetic condition that raises the risk of a number of cancers, in the hope it can prevent them developing. Lynch syndrome is caused by a mutation in the gene that fixes mistakes in DNA when it is copied, which can lead to uncontrolled cell growth. Those with it are at higher risk of developing cancers of the bowel, womb and ovaries. About 1,100 bowel cancer cases in England each year are caused by Lynch syndrome, which is thought to increase the lifetime risk of the disease by 80%. Researchers from the University of Oxford could potentially design a vaccine to teach the immune system of those with the disorder to recognise and destroy cells before they become cancer. As part of the project, known as LynchVax, scientists will analyse cells from Lynch syndrome patients that are showing signs of becoming cancerous. They will use their findings to determine which parts of a precancer cell can be attacked by the immune system and if a vaccine approach is likely to work. Simon Leedham, a professor of molecular genetics at the University of Oxford and honorary consultant gastroenterologist, said, "People with Lynch syndrome are at very high risk of developing bowel, womb and other cancers, so much so they get invited to attend bowel screening appointments at a younger age. LynchVax has the potential to reduce that risk. While our work is in its infancy, we are excited by the prospect of a vaccine that can potentially be used to prevent the multiple types of cancer that typically occur in people with Lynch syndrome and deliver tangible improvements in survival. An estimated 1 in 400 people in England have the condition, according to the NHS, but only 5% are aware they live with it. Last year, the NHS began rolling out a genetic test for Lynch syndrome. Helen White, a member of the LynchVax Patient Public Involvement Group, added, "As passionate advocates for involving people with lived experience in research, we fully endorse the plans to reach out to the wider Lynch syndrome community to gather their views on a cancer-preventing vaccine. This is a crucial step in preparing for future clinical trials. Cancer Research UK has awarded the LynchVax team £550,000.
And that is all the news for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about OxTalk, please feel free to contact us by phoning 07496 062 280. That is 07496 062 280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message, or you can send us an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and past editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can listen to these editions directly or download them online. If you need any further help or have any further queries, please feel free to contact us. That is all for now. We hope you have a wonderful week, and thank you for listening.